Hello and welcome to another episode of the Psychosocial Distancing Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Daniel Chadbourne, and of course with me is Thomas Brooks.
Hello, hello.
So, I said we were going to watch something not entirely psych-related without a professor who messes around with their students, and I was wrong
because you were wrong.
Math professor hits on his students.
Yep.
And I was so upset. Just thinking just once, maybe. But hey, Robin Williams is in this. He's pretty ethical, except for that time he chokes Matt Damon in the movie.
Yeah, yeah. And he says some things in class that I probably wouldn't say in class, but, you know.
Yeah. But hey, it's the 90s. It's a community college.
Oh, Lord.
Sure. Ooh. So we watched Good Will Hunting.
We watched Good Will Hunting. Fun fact, this was actually the first time I've watched this movie.
I've seen it once before.
Okay. So
it's kind of like coming into it fresh. Like a lot of these movies, I saw once, other things happened in life, and I just kind of forgot they existed. It's like, I knew there was therapy in the movie. I was like, let's watch it. There's some psychology in it.
One of the things that's always giving me grief in my social circles is that, like, there's been this expectation that I've always watched this movie and I never had. And after I watched this movie, now I understand, like, I've come into my, like, not to be crass, but this was very much a white dude movie.
Yeah, I made some notes that the beginning is very kind of a product of the late 90s, early 2000s, maybe... I'd say maybe feel good. There's a lot. I mean, you maybe feel okay at the end.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really a feel good all around movie.
Yeah. But no, I feel like I've actually, like, you know, I've participated in my, like, obligatory white dude movie for the year.
Yeah. It's just the one that, you know, kind of everyone kind of has to see at some point in their lives. So Ben Affleck, Matt Damon, Robin Williams, and I can't remember her name now, and I had it written down. Minnie Driver. There we go.
And Stellan Skarsgård.
There was this brief moment where I was like, that's not William Hurt, is it? Because this would be a fantastic turnaround.
Yeah.
And I'm like, nope, that's Stellan Skarsgård. And he was fine in the movie. I mean, everyone was good in the movie. Like, the one best screenplay. Robin Williams won Best Supporting Actor, and he deserved it. Like, he was really good in this movie. I love me some Robin Williams. Dramatic Robin Williams is pretty good. Beyond pretty good. I thought he did a fantastic job in this movie, playing a very, I don't know, real character, but a very, you know, empathetic, conflicted.
It was nice to see a good guy psychologist for once.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he definitely had some moments where you're like, but, you know, his heart was in the right place. And it wasn't like the entire movie you're like, that's just bad. He shouldn't be doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of worked in the situation. I mean, the way they kind of set it up, you've got this kind of rebellious, doesn't want to, you know, wants to break people down. You know, main character in Will Hunting, and that, you know, this other, like, yep, I grew up on the south side of Boston too. I'm just as hardcore as you are. Let's throw down. Kind of clinical psychologist to kind of crack him, to get him to open up, to get him to see some of the underlying issues that are going on, you know, that have been going on in his life. So, yeah. So I don't know where to start with this, because I think you brought it up in our pre-discussion that this isn't really a psychology movie like the ones that we've been watching.
Yeah, no, I was kind of surprised. I kind of thought that we would be talking about, I don't know, like, I know we can talk about, like, the Rogerian mode of counseling, but I kind of figured we'd have more to kind of bite our teeth into. I kind of felt like this movie was less about psychology specifically and kind of more of a exploration of different dynamics within academia, and like, what does it mean to be successful? What does it mean to be successful in an academic position in your academic career, and kind of the different avenues that people get into academia and why they choose to stay or leave, or, you know, go up in their career or decide to stay in a position, which I thought was really interesting. I think the number one thing that I kind of pulled from this movie was this tension between this kind of upper class, upper echelon, Ivy League, you know, group of people, and how they approach and interact with academia versus like lower class, working class people, people in poverty. It was almost kind of like, I don't know if you've seen this on Facebook or anything, but sometimes this post goes around where it's like, you know, like you're, think of all of the people who could have been Einstein had they been given the opportunity to, you know, financially and materially. And I felt like it kind of explored that in an interesting way, that maybe the person who does get that material or financial or, you know, social support to be the next Einstein decides not to. And how do we rationalize that in our, like, you know, cultural consciousness of like, be the best you can be, climb to the top, you know, be famous if you can be famous. And with Will Hunting, it was like, I don't really want to, guys. Like, I do this thing, and that's cool. You think it's cool, but that's not really my jam.
Yeah, he enjoys his time with his friends. He feels grounded with them. And I mean, part of that they explore in the movie is that it, you know, may also be that they're loyal. Like, he actually, you know, with his past history and with his upbringing, that they're his rock. They're his stability in life. And even though, you know, it might involve getting in fights and, you know, drinking every night or every other day, that, and working at a construction site, because that's good, honest work and people have to do it and they should feel, you know, proud if they're bricklayers or mechanics or whatnot. But, but yeah, like, do you, you know, are you happy with that? Do you need that? Are you, you know, what if you're destined for more or whatnot? And they explore a lot of those. And I think ultimately, at least my kind of take is that it's not, you know, even if that's a part of it. So even if he ends up going and getting like a good job somewhere in San Francisco or whatever at the end, that the ultimate goal that Sean, Robin Williams's character is kind of in trying to instill in him, and then his fight with Skarsgård's character is this idea that, like, doesn't matter. Like, you don't have to have the prestigious math award. You don't have to work for the NSA. You don't have to go and like make $100,000 a year. It's about getting that experience and being happy.
Mm-hmm.
And that if you can do that without, you know, without the Harvard position, then good.
Mm-hmm.
Then you shouldn't feel less.
I've got a bit, like, my Marxist heart was warmed this Christmas Eve by this movie a little bit, because kind of, I mean, I was a little conflicted at the end. Like, you know, I probably would have liked to see him use his talents to like better his community. But, you know, that's asking too much for the 90s. He has to go across the country to be with his rich British girlfriend. But I especially love that NSA interview.
It was fantastic.
It was fantastic when he broke down and was like, why shouldn't you work for the NSA or the CIA or whatever? And he was like, well, if I crack this code, then you found this village that some terrorists are at, and then you just killed all of the people, innocent people in that village, and then you're going to start a war, and then gas prices, and then the gas company is going to like pollute the ocean. And so now my buddy here in Boston not only like has to go fight in this war, but also you've shipped his job overseas. And also now he can't get, you know, the local food because you've poisoned the ocean.
Yep.
And I was like, yes, yes, 100% yes. I'm totally on board. Good for you, dude. Like, that is an excellent, like, you know, explanation of the situation, and I was very happy to see that.
And there was no, like, official closure at the end, so there's no saying, you know, he doesn't go on to do something like that, because, I mean, it does show that he kind of quasi almost takes the job, but not at the NSA, at a different company, so it's very obvious he's not interested in doing that. And a lot of that also comes out to with his friend talking, basically, I think, kind of expressing some similar sentiment. Like, you're not meant to stay here and do construction work your entire life. Like, we're going to be upset. I'm going to be personally upset if you are here in 50 years. If in 20 years, we're still hanging out, drinking beers because you could have done better.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that better is ultimately, you know, coming back and helping, or you know, doing some good or some better, because he definitely does seem, and I think that's almost what Robin Williams's character is kind of there for, as this part of where I guess his push is to try to kind of help him find part of that meaning or purpose, but to also direct it in a way in which he feels satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, it's not about what he wants, or what the Skarsgård professor wants, or even what his friends want. It's what he wants, is that he needs to find something that kind of fulfills his life, but also to get out, to experience, mm-hmm. to you know, understand the world more, mm-hmm. than just breaking people down based on, you know, maybe what you've read in a book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. And I think that might have been one of the things that I wasn't entirely on board with this movie, was this kind of idea that, like, you're the chosen one. You get to succeed into the meritocracy because you're smart, and you get to get out of this poverty.
Yeah.
And that was kind of a little gross for me, but I did appreciate, particularly, and I guess we can get into this, was the dynamic between the Ivy League and the community college, and kind of how Robin Williams' character, you know, chose to be where he is, very, like, on purpose, because he knew that that would fulfill him, and that there was nothing wrong with choosing that route of, you know, staying within higher education, as opposed to his friend who's constantly going after the awards and the prestige, etc. So
yeah, and it does seem that, I mean, they definitely, I mean, they more to allude, you know, they kind of say it outright that his character is not, you know, not less than Skarsgård's, that his character is likely smarter than Skarsgård, and he chose that. It wasn't that he was driven out or that he failed. It was a conscious decision for him to kind of go that route, to do what he did, more counseling with vets and, you know, the other work that it looks like he's done over the last 20 years is that conscious decision to do what you feel is right.
And I think something that, you know, if we have an undergraduate audience, may not kind of recognize, particularly if y'all are at Highlands, is that, you know, and even at A&M Commerce too, this kind of extends this community college atmosphere, but that's very different working conditions, in terms of, like, work-life balance, the ability to have a personal life, the ability to, like, get to know your students when you choose the smaller university. Because when you get up to that MIT level, or even, like, just your, like, upscale engineering school at the state level, like, I went to UTA and it was publish or perish. You had to be writing grants. I watched professors, like, I would have a professor one semester and then they would be gone the next semester because they didn't bring in enough money to the university. And so that, like, work is a grind. And so it's very, like, by choosing the community college or the smaller state school to teach at and to work at, you're choosing to have a life, essentially. You're choosing to have a relationship with your students, you know, you're choosing to have relationships with the people around you and your community, because, like, the prestige looks great on paper, but I would not want that life just where I'm at right now.
And the Skarsgård is at Harvard, which would be an R1 institution, so heavy research focus, heavy grant focus. He's probably only teaching one, two classes a semester, probably one, and he's doing research. He's doing work beyond that. And you know, the classes that he does teach have 200 plus people in it. And you look at someone like Robin Williams's character, who's got these small courses. He's probably teaching 4 to 5 a semester. He looks like he's also doing clinical work on the side. And so, yeah, that he's definitely the work is different. And again, that kind of gets into, you know, well, what makes you happier? You know, are you happier? I mean, I think we're all happy doing a little research. I love doing research. I love writing stuff, but there's just something about, I think, teaching that's just more fulfilling in the long run, or working with students that's more fulfilling in the long run. And I definitely see
And
the
having
appeal.
that kind of research relationship with your students, that's more egalitarian in a partnership rather than you're like slave monkeys because you don't have time to run your own research because you're writing grants.
Yeah, and I mean, it could be, I mean, whether it was intended or not, you can potentially argue that it's emulated in the characters of you know, it's Will Hunting's relationship with, and I forget the professor's name, Skarsgård and Williams, but their his relationship with them is very different, and so I mean, you know, the relationship is more work versus the kind of client therapist relationship. With Robin Williams,
Lambo.
but that Lambeau, yeah. So his relationship with Sean is far more cordial. It's meant to be kind of tied into that, but also, you know, from that perspective, like how he would engage with his students is probably closer to that. Whereas with Dr. Lambeau, the relationship is about work. If you're working with him, you're doing work, and you're providing those proofs. And you know, in a way, they're both projecting kind of aspects of themselves onto Will. One that Lambeau sees him as more intelligent, more capable than he is, and doesn't want to see him throwing it away because, again, success is everything. Because that's the mentality you have to have to succeed at a school like Harvard, at an Ivy League R1 institution. I mean, really any R1 institution. I remember having a conversation with someone who had worked at an R1 institution and was talking about, you know, one of her colleagues being told by their kids that they want them to be, you know, dad for Halloween because they don't get to see it.
Oh,
And I was like, that's
that
horrible.
hurts.
But just the stress and the pressures and what they involve are, you know, eye-opening. I mean, and again, some people flourish in those situations. It's definitely not for everyone. And I don't necessarily want to get into the realm of the concept of like a type A or type B personality and the likelihood of that existing, but like a more driven, more, you know, work focused. Hey, some people love that. They get enjoyment out of that, but it's that, what's that thing? I came across it in, I think the meme in grad school that you get sleep, like school and friends. It's kind of like family. It's like family, work, and whatever else. You could only pick two.
And grad school
Maybe
takes all of them.
sleep is the other one. Yeah, like you can only really pick two. And if you want to try to balance, you're gonna have to give something up. And depending on where you are, there might be a bigger emphasis on some of those things. And I mean, if we're talking about like teaching research and our personal lives, depending on where we are, depends on how much of one of those three we're going to have to give up. Again, some people can pull it off. Some people can do it and succeed and excel. It might be why you see cases of, you know, psychologists marrying other psychologists or researchers marrying other people that they, because like that's, if that's all you're doing, like you might as well do research together. You might as well work together.
And this kind of reminds me, and this is just kind of a little bit of a rabbit hole, but within the same vein, I don't know if you remember, but there was a lot of posts going around when COVID started happening and we were all like under lockdown that were like, now's the time to write your book. Now's the time to do this. Now's the time to beef up your research. And, or like, you know, look at this, like, you know, 18th century scientist who did all of this work while he was in isolation. And you can emulate that and be that be your role model.
Sure, if you were in isolation by yourself and also in the 18th century without media or social media.
Well, also, like, a lot of these, like, classic thinkers that we point to as being brilliant were a part of the aristocracy.
Yeah.
And so they didn't work. Like, they didn't do anything. Right. Like, that was their hobby. And so, you know, to put that to, like, project, like, oh, I can be, you know, the next Charles Darwin or something like that. Like, no, Charles Darwin's family was rich. Like, he didn't have any responsibilities.
And that also looks to be a disconnect, too, that's shown in the movie. And I think that's something that... And I think that's why the relationship between Will and Sean worked really well in the movie, is that they, in the grand scheme of things, had a similar mentality. They wanted to stay grounded. They mm-hmm. wanted to have, you know, part of his reason not to was not wanting to be close to people and having mm-hmm. them betray him because of issues with foster parents and other stuff this character had gone through. But this idea that you have kind of, you know, Sean and Lambo, that they're also, you know, the math professor is single, work is his life, research is his life, and it kind of shows in how he interacts with people, and you know how that kind of plays out. And there is also that conflict between was it Skylar, Minnie Driver's character, I'm trying to remember her name.
Mm-hmm. I think it was Skylar.
That there's a bit of conflict there, because, you know, he's again worried, like, well, you've got this money, you're able to kind of go and do this, you're able to go to this expensive institution, you're kind of just like that guy from the beginning of the movie, like, are you gonna leave too? Because, like, this is who I am. I'm a working class, you know, the guy living in the slums. That you know, Robin Williams is kind of conscious choice to maybe take a less stressful, less intense job because he wanted to be with the woman he loved.
Mm-hmm.
That again, that disconnect between, but also having the kind of realization of that, you know, it's not necessarily failure. It's not failure on his part. It's a conscious decision that, like, I know that if I take position A, there's going to be more stress and there's going to be more conflict in my life. And, like, I might miss out on some of this other stuff that I'll be less likely to miss out on if I choose option B. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, there's a lot of that working class / academia / you know, every, you know, kind of everything undertones to this movie.
Mm-hmm. And you can also see it with the conflict between Will and Tom, the grad student under Lambo.
Oh yeah,
because Tom is like, you know, he's like worked really, really hard. He sacrificed all of his resources and his relationships, and he's at the beck and call of Lambo to, like, you know, get prestige for himself and, you know, connect with his grad advisor. And then Will just comes walking in like, oh yeah, I can do this proof. So, like, there's
over
bitterness all over his face. And you see, like, one of the scenes that, like, really got me was, I think it was towards the end when Will was going to get out of, like, he was leaving the research, mm-hmm. and they were in a meeting, and, like, Tom was like, I hope you appreciate everything he's done for you. And then as soon as, like, Lambo comes in, he's like, Tom, get us coffee.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, gross. So
yeah.
It was like, yeah, no, like, overall, it did not paint a very positive image of the Ivy League.
But I mean, I think if you're talking about, like, especially something written by Ben Affleck and Matt Damon, like, you know, like, the kind of the sons of, like, at least, like, they cut the kind of image, like, they have this real love for, like, working class Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And you could definitely see that, like, you know, like, tied to those areas, like, to an extent, I'm not entirely sure if they grew up there, but I mean, like from that kind of like working class, building yourself up, you know, respect for the people who put in the work. It definitely shows, and those are consistent themes throughout this movie. Is that, and I mean, maybe there's an analogy in there somewhere for someone like Affleck or Damon, who, you know, may have had, I'd have to read more into their history, but may have had some of, you know, but got a chance to get out. And maybe there's an analogy there too of saying like, look, I mean, if you got the chance, like go out and do good things, like make your hometown proud, you know, be that exception that we can look to and say like, yep, I grew up with that guy, or, you know, I knew they had potential and they didn't squander their potential. They didn't keep themselves in a rut just to be safe.
And that's kind of what I guess I liked about the movie was there was also kind of a exploration of how maybe that's an unfair pressure too on an individual, because he just ultimately decides not to do that.
Yeah, I mean, he really kind of hits all those marks and then goes, you know what, like, that's not gonna make me happy either. I might as well give it a shot. And I mean, you know, maybe, you know, I don't know if I'm reading too much into it, but maybe, you know, maybe there's that influence from Sean as his therapist is sort of that, like, give it a shot. If it doesn't work, like, you tried. You can always come back and go back to drinking every week. You can always take that job. Like, you know, the NSA is not going to hire you 2 years later because, you know, you turned them down the first, like, you're a genius. Like, they'll take you because you have the talent. Like, you might as well enjoy, well, you know, enjoy or try at these things you might be afraid of doing.
Yeah, and I think the last thing I have to say on this is just in terms of the class dynamic within this movie was kind of how Harvard was an island in of itself.
Yeah.
Like, it was close enough to where, and like even MIT, where he was being the janitor, like it was in his town, or it was just a short drive from his town, but it was a completely different world. And like his anxieties around like not wanting Skylar to come home with him, because he was like, you're not ready for what's outside of your little academia bubble.
Yeah.
And that's something that I see quite a bit. Like when I went to UTA, for example, like UTA, gorgeous, lots of money, lots of pretty cars. You go two blocks and you are in, you know, poverty. And that's the way like Texas Wesleyan is. And even Texas A&M Commerce, like the school itself looks nice. It looks great, but you go north and you're like actually in a decaying small town.
Yeah.
And so that distinction between the university campus and then the communities in which they are implanted in was also, I thought, well illuminated in this movie, because that's a serious problem, having these little islands and these decaying communities that just, you know, exist in isolation.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so besides the class division, I mean, the only other big thing in this movie, you know, really focuses on, I think, they kind of tap into, and I don't want to say it's Rogerian. It seems to be a little more Rogerian than anything else. It's kind of hard to pinpoint what therapy he's using, but if we're talking about something that's built on trust, it's a lot of communication. It's very non-directive. I mean, the whole bit where they just sit in silence for an hour. Lambo's like, what do you mean you didn't talk? And he's like, he's showing me he doesn't have to, and I can't be the one who starts. I can't give the first word. It screams Rogerian. Yeah, very person oriented, very individual centric, very non-directive, very open to trying to build that trust and empathy and letting the person kind of make the decision of when they want to start and when they want to, what they want to say. And the therapist is just sort of there to give those, you know, very kind of hokey stereotypical, like, well, how does that make you feel? Or what were you thinking of in this situation? Or, you know, that sounds interesting. Can you elaborate on that? Very questions that only exist to help the person understand themselves better, to think and retrospect and whatnot more. And it's a huge divide, especially at the beginning, between the self-help psychologist, I wanted to call him, because he had the self-help book that Will reads before going to meet, and then the hypnotherapist.
The hypnotherapist was a trip.
And just the whole thing with that. And I really wish, because he mentioned that he'd taken him to 5. I really wish we would have seen the other 3. Mm-hmm. I would love to see the deleted scenes where they had these other therapists, these kind of stereotypical therapists who are just not going to be helpful for a person in this situation.
I think the only thing that keeps me from calling Roger Williams's character a Rogerian would be I didn't see a lot of unconditional positive regard.
So yeah, he was a good mix between, if you combined a Rogerian therapist and a therapist who studied Albert Ellis's rational emotive behavioral therapy, which is very argumentative, it's defensive, it's you're wrong.
Yeah.
There's pushback to basically fight against maladaptive thoughts. Whereas, if I'm remembering my stuff correctly, Aaron Beck's cognitive therapy is more about like homework and about a lot of introspection.
Lots of tasks.
Yes. Ellis was more, let's get to the meat of what's bothering you. And if you're going to deny it, I'm going to call you out to your face.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have a talk about it, and you're not going to like it. And there was a lot of that. But it almost made me wonder if, like, part of that was out of this idea that, like, I've got this kid who grew up in South Boston. You know, if I'm playing Robin Williams' character, you know, if I'm that character, you know, I grew up there as well. Well, how are you going to relate to this guy? You're not going to relate to him being nice.
Yeah.
You're not going to relate. You're going to relate to him being a bit of an a-hole. You have to be just as snarky and as much of a smart ass as he is. And yeah, I mean, to an extent, you have to be able to tap in and reach people on their level.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that I thought was a really good example of therapy within this movie was kind of his acknowledgement of his past trauma and kind of how that influenced all of his behaviors, and then all kind of stemmed from that. So like one of the things, like my side research project is with childhood trauma and how that influences them academically and socially, and like this whole like fear of being connected, unable to relate to people, highly defensive, relying on substances for escapism. These are all telltale signs of past trauma. And I was like going through, I was like, oh wow, like they did a really good job portraying this, and how kind of the way to overcome the trauma, well, not really overcome the trauma, but you know, get to a point where you can start relating to people, was to build that interpersonal connection between Sean and Will. Like that's the found, like trauma disrupts that ability, your ability to, you know, connect with other people. And so a lot of trauma-informed approaches focus in on that relational aspect and getting people to, you know, relate to their new foster parents or relate to their teacher or make friends and like rebuild those levels of trust and attachment with other humans. And I thought, you know, despite Robin Williams not having unconditional positive regard, they did an excellent job demonstrating how you build that social attachment that, you know, can be used as a scaffold for other relationships in your life.
Yeah. And it's kind of hard to even say, I would say that he didn't show necessarily unconditional positive regard towards Will, but he definitely seemed to have a sense of like really, you know, really like high empathy, high respect, was basically trying to get across in many cases that like, you can go do whatever you want. Like, I don't care if you take, you know, the job at the NSA or you take the job at, you know, this other think tank, or you go lay bricks for the rest of your life. But like, you have to kind of be square with that. that you have to feel good about that decision. You have to feel that you're not kind of wasting yourself. You know, if that's where you feel happy in life, great. But yeah, that he definitely didn't show it though. But I guess, I mean, in the context of this movie, I don't think it would have worked.
Yeah, I know it's easier to choke them out.
Yeah.
That'll get the point across. Some tough love choking.
I mean, it seemed to. It
Would you
definitely got
not
his
recommend
attention,
to?
you know?
Would you not recommend choking your clients?
No. That would
No.
not be a good idea.
No.
I did like the joke at the end, you know, if we're talking about ethical nature, like, is this violate? They're hugging, and it's like, does this violate patient client or patient therapist or client therapist relationship? And he's like, oh, only if you squeeze my ass. I was like, all right, like, that's fine. That's the kind of witty banter of people who've got to know each other over months and months. And I mean, in this case, I think there was some lines blurred in terms of like attachment. But I think that's kind of meant to be as part of the movie that Sean sees a lot of himself in Will, and sees a person in a very similar situation who came from a very similar background, who is where he was 30 years ago, and is able to maybe be a little more open in a session and saying, well, this is where I came from, like, because we're very much alike.
Yeah, no, I thought that that demonstration of the way that you treat trauma is by teaching people how to build social relationships again. And I thought that was a great, like, that was probably the highlight of the psychology in this movie for me, was look like seeing that play out and the consequences and the struggles and everything like that. Thought it was excellent.
Yeah, the themes of building trust is a very strong theme in this movie. Of you have people who, like, again, Skarsgård's character, just he never forms that bond. There's no trust there. It's really all like, I see this person, I want to mold them into something great. It's really kind of more, he says otherwise, but it's about what he wants. It's him. And that trust, I mean, even when you're kind of blurring the lines between revealing personal details, part of that for Robin Williams or for Sean is to build trust. The only way he's going to build trust with this, you know, with this kid is to, or this guy is to, like, let him know, like, no, I understand what you're going through. I've been there. I've experienced a lot of these things and more in many ways. And I want you to know you're not alone. I'm here for you. And you know, it's not your fault. That
It's not
whole
your
scene.
fault. It's not your fault. It's not your fault. It's not your fault.
Was a little
It's not your fault.
meme-y.
It was a little meme-y.
Little cliche, but yeah, you know, for what they depicted with psychology in particular, I thought it was well done. And you know, he was, you know, he made an off-color joke about violating the lines at the beginning of the movie, but that was just to get his students to kind of snap back into attention. And you
Nail them
know,
while they're vulnerable.
yep.
I wrote that down. I was like, oh, that's awesome. At
So, yeah.
least the movie was self-aware about the psychologist being creepy.
Oh yeah. I wrote down the joke of like, remember next class we're going to talk about Freud and why he did enough cocaine to kill a horse. I was like, yeah.
I did appreciate that we finally watched a psych movie that wasn't Freudian.
Yes. Yeah,
Like, I did not pick up any Freud vibes in this movie whatsoever.
the hypnotist.
I mean, yeah, but that was kind of showcased.
Yeah, it was meant to be like this isn't going to work. This isn't good. Guy needs to be kind of made fun of. Now that hypnotism can't work, I mean, that's probably a discussion all on its own. Not that it
Yeah,
can't
no.
work, but there are issues, and it has an interesting history.
Yes, no, I like not seeing Freudian themes, because even though like high anxiety, like we talked about, like super disputed Freud, the thematics of the entire movie was Freud. So it was kind of like, well, what are y'all doing here, guys?
I mean, Kinsey, to an extent, it's all about fighting against that mentality that created mm-hmm. Freud. So there's a lot of underlying.
Also, he was arguing with his like father archetype that was his super ego.
Yes.
Repressing his deviant sexual desires. So I was like, okay, more Freud.
This is about, you know, choice, feeling good about your decisions, overcoming trauma, trust, building positive relationships, and you know, ultimately the relationships that we have with a lot of people and why we have some of those relationships, and you know, people kind of struggling with those relationships, and because I mean, every, you know, there's really, I guess, five major characters. There's the two you know, professors, there's Will, there's his girlfriend, and there's his best friend, you know, kind of represent these kind of interlocking relationships of you know, people that are kind of, you know, all trying to, you know, kind of find their own place. And I mean, honestly, out of all of them, I think Ben Affleck's character is probably the most stable.
Yeah.
He's like, I know who I am. I know what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I might have to do construction for the rest of my life, but hey, you know, this is how we're going to make it. You know,
No, and I appreciated that each of these characters like sat at a different intersection of class too, and kind of explored relationships across class lines and kind of expectations of relationships.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Skyler was like, "Hey, move to California with me," and Matt Damon was like, "I'm not. I'm dying here. You know that, right?"
Like, I live here. Like,
yeah, I live here. What do you mean, go to California? This is, I mean, another tangent, but
yeah.
related with this choice of travel. That's kind of a signifier of being in the upper class, is that you have the ability to move wherever you want. And even with Robin Williams' character, like, clearly he wasn't going to a podunk college with, you know, Lambo. So, like, he still got to choose, had the ability to choose to go back to the community college, whereas, like, you know, you graduate from a lower status university, like, you're lucky to get the community college. And so, you know, and this woman traveled from England to Harvard, and now she's going to Stanford, and she's, you know, distance places are not a thing that she's attached to.
I think I empathized a lot with, especially this, I mean, we could say this is a tangent, but you know, I kind of feel a lot of this aspect because, you know, that's something that living 35 years, 34 years of my life in Southern Louisiana. And then, I mean, it literally taking, going back to school, getting a PhD, and then basically teaching for 10 years and not really being all that comfortable with the ability to move and take a job, I mean, literally 1,100 miles away. And it was, you know, it's a really tough choice, even if you feel that you can do it. And I'll tell you, it was not an easy undertaking that first year with going back to one income and basically taking what you have in savings and going, this is what I got to spend on getting me across the country. Because it is expensive to move. And so, yeah, like the character who, you know, again, that level of stability, not wanting to risk it, because what happens if she says, you know, what happens in a year? If she's like, oh, this isn't working out, but I'm stuck with this guy. Like, you don't want that. You don't want to regret that choice when you have something easy and without some sort of wake-up call.
No, because that's very real. Like, you know, he goes out to California and, like, you know, like they tie this material anxiety around his trauma, but I think it would be more apt to tie it around his class, and it would be particularly bad, like, in your situation where you have like a wife and a kid, you know, or if somebody has like sick parents they have to take care of, like,
oh yeah,
you know, I look at some of these graduate students who are graduating and wanting to be professors, but they have like family obligations here.
It's tough.
It's
a big decision, especially because there are things you have to think about. I mean, if it's just, you know, if I were a single person, it would have been such an easier decision just to up and move somewhere, you know, if I felt that I could. But yeah, that you have these additional concerns. For a couple of social psychologists, a lot to talk about in this movie. There's a lot to enjoy. So I guess we can rate it.
Yeah. Well, how would you rate this, Dr. Chadbourne?
I mean, if I'm putting it with the others, I mean, I thought it was a fantastic movie. I thought it was good. The only thing that threw me off was, and I wrote it down, I was like, this is a quintessential late 90s, early 2000s movie, complete with opening credits and music by Danny Elfman.
Yes, I did appreciate Danny Elfman.
I think if I was willing to give A Dangerous Method an 8 out of 10, I got to give this at least a 9.
Okay.
Because I enjoyed it considerably more than A Dangerous Method.
Okay.
I enjoyed it as a psych movie and as a regular movie more, to be completely honest. I think just because it was very different, because we had watched because it was very different than the last couple. And again, I think partially because of that, again, that working class academia divide, the underlying discussions that take place in the movie, the conflicts and the characters, it is not surprising why this won an Oscar for best screenplay. It's I thought it was very good. And so yeah, you know, maybe if I'm bumping Dangerous Method down, I would maybe put it at an 8. I'd give it a 9. I enjoyed it for what, not just what it was, but I also rewatch a bunch more Robin Williams movies. I need more empathetic yet kind of in your face Robin Williams more in my life.
So are we watching Dead Poets Society next?
Yeah, we go ahead. Sure, why not? I mean, just completely, like, as a psychology movie, it's 0 out of 10. But...
I would, so I agree. I don't know. I feel like that rationally I should give it a higher score. So rationally, I completely agree, 9 out of 10. But just walking away from this movie, I think I would be fine if I never saw it again.
Oh, yeah, I could see that.
I would want to rewatch Dangerous Method, for example. I would enjoy that, but I didn't particularly enjoy my time watching this movie, despite finding it interesting and engaging. So I would probably give it a 7.
Okay.
Which, like, I recognize it's an excellent movie. It's well done. You know, clearly I loved the themes, but I didn't quite get that, like, it wasn't quite my cup of tea for some reason.
Well, it's I think it very much falls in line with one of those kind of, again, Academy Award winning dramas.
Yeah.
Aren't necessarily, you know, like, experiencing them once and saying that you've seen it, understanding, like, what they do really well and maybe where they could do better. Sure. And then, you know, you maybe never see it again, or, you know, you're able to maybe understand, you know, when another movie references it, someone else does a "What About Them Apples" reference. Sure. Yeah. If we average it out, an 8 out of 10 is fine. As a psychology movie, you know, we're not talking about history of psychology, but we could say portrayal of psychology, which I thought was really good. I thought it was really well. I thought it was portrayed. It was, the main focus was basically helping him overcome trauma and the efficacy and benefits of how good therapy, as opposed to some of the other therapy that they showed, that, again, building trust, building rapport, building a connection is kind of what was needed. Not just a self-help discussion, not hypnosis, not talking about, you know, your daddy issues or, you know, oral fixations, the crack a joke about at the beginning. I think as a psychology movie, I would definitely put it up there.
No, I think that the use value for this, like, I can very distinctly see myself having a class watch this movie after a trauma lecture, or maybe over the course of like a special topics in trauma psych.
Yes. Yes.
Like, I think this would definitely be on that list to use. So I think I would probably, like, just because of that, I think I would give this a 10.
Yeah, I could stand by that. I mean, and again, I think their portrayal, like, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a situation where they're trying to talk about history and maybe there's some things you need to discuss. You need to, like, bring up in class, well, this really isn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, their portrayal of the therapeutic process, their portrayal of a very adversive, I don't want to be, you know, I don't need to be here kind of client.
Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that they did not fetishize the trauma.
Yes, it was definitely... It was definitely not viewed positively, and it's
well, they negative. Also didn't like indulge in like how awful it was either. Like, there was a very small scene where they kind of like let you know how bad it was, but it wasn't like him unpacking the trauma. It was him experiencing life with the consequences of that trauma.
Right.
And that's what was the focus. And I was like, yes, I appreciate this. I don't need flashbacks. We don't need to re-trigger everybody else with trauma.
Right. Yeah, so we can definitely say 8 out of 10 as a movie, kind of our average, and then, yeah, I think a solid 10 out of 10 for class use psychology movie portrayal of therapy. So, yeah. So, I mean, we at least didn't have a psychologist hitting on their students.
Yes, that was nice. We didn't have any Freud.
Even though it was, no Freud in this one, and I don't know, maybe we'll keep that up. Maybe not. We'll see.
I think we're going to keep it up because next week we have, are we scheduled for our special guest?
It's week after next.
Week after next. So what's next?
Week after next. I don't know yet. Oh, still trying to work it out.
We'll figure it out.
Cool. So yeah. So that was good. Good conversation.
We have a good time.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, until next time, goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.